Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session of today's call, you may press star one to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I'll turn the call over to Barbara Reynolds. You may begin.
Good afternoon. You're joining CDC's update on the Ebola response. I'm Barbara Reynolds, the Director of CDC's Public Affairs. You're going to be hearing today from two speakers, and then we'll take questions. We'll be taking questions both from the room and on the phone. For those of you who are in the room, would you please take the microphone and offer your name and affiliation? Because of the volume of questions that we're having, could you please limit it to one question, and then we'll come back around if there's time later. My first speaker is CDC Director, Dr. Tom Frieden.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today, we're going to focus on two aspects of the response to Ebola. First, what we're doing to improve the safety in our healthcare settings, and second, what's going on with contact tracing in Dallas. I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. David Lakey. Dr. Lakey is in Texas, along with the excellent team from the Texas State and the County Health Departments, as well as more than 20 staff from CDC who are helping with all aspects of the response. In Dallas, what we've done over the past 48 hours to improve infection control there is send a team into the field. And we've sent CDC's most experienced staff, people who have worked on Ebola outbreaks for decades, people who have stopped Ebola outbreaks in very difficult situations in Africa, people who are experts leading the world in everything from laboratory science to infection control, to hospital administration. And we're working hand in glove, side by side, with the folks at the hospital and with the teams from the health departments in Texas, as well as the county leadership and the state. Some of the things that the teams are doing to improve safety are looking at every step in the procedures. And those experts are making immediate enhancements in what's being done. I'll mention three in particular, although there are three of just a large series. The first and most important is ensuring that every hour of the day there is a site manager there who is overseeing aspects of infection control. That individual makes sure that the personal protective equipment is put on correctly and taken off correctly. In fact, in our work stopping Ebola in Africa, this is the single most important position to protect health workers, a single site manager who is expert and oversees every aspect of the process. Second, we're enhancing training, ongoing refresher, repeat training, including by two nurses from Emory who cared for Ebola patients and are assisting and training nurses and other staff at the hospital in Dallas. And third, we're recommending that the number of staff who go in for care be limited. We want to limit the number of staff who are providing care so that they can become more familiar and more systematic in how they put on and take off protective equipment, and they can become more comfortable in a healthy way with providing care in the isolation unit. Those three general steps are very important, and we're also doing many other things, looking at everything from the type of personal protective equipment used to the procedure for putting it on and the procedure for taking it off. Now, I've been hearing loud and clear from health care workers from around the country that they're worried, that they don't feel prepared to take care of a patient with Ebola, that they're very distressed that one of our colleagues now has contracted Ebola and is fighting the infection in Dallas. A single infection in a health care worker is unacceptable. And what we're doing at this point is looking at everything we can do to minimize that risk so those who are caring for her do that safely and effectively. There are certain additional things that we will be doing going forward. One thing we want to make sure is that whatever is done with where care is provided, every hospital in the country needs to be ready to diagnose Ebola. That means that every doctor, every nurse, every staff person in an emergency department who cares for someone with fever or other signs of infection needs to ask, where have you been in the past month? Where have you been in the past 21 days? Have you been to Liberia, Sierra Leone, or Guinea? That's important. That will reduce the risk that someone will come into a hospital and not be diagnosed. The fact is that usually infections in healthcare settings spread from someone who's not yet diagnosed. So we have to shore up the diagnosis of people who have symptoms and who have traveled. The second thing that we will be doing starting today is establishing a CDC Ebola response team for any hospital anywhere in the country that has a confirmed case of Ebola. We will put a team on the ground within hours with some of the world's leading experts in how to take care of and protect healthcare workers from Ebola infection. That will include experts in infection control, in laboratory science, in personal protective equipment, in management of Ebola units, experts who will assist with experimental therapies, public education, and environmental controls. We have at CDC some of the absolute best experts in the world. They've devoted their lives to stopping Ebola. Many of them, like myself, are physicians trained in infectious diseases and public health. Others are specialists in laboratory science or outreach, experts in everything from contact tracing to epidemiology, to what it takes to stop an outbreak in different settings. They will look at everything from the physical layout of care to the personal protective equipment used. They will bring supplies of personal protective equipment. They will assist with transport of patients should that become necessary. They will assist with waste management and decontamination. In addition, for training of healthcare workers throughout the country, we will be ramping up webinars, conference calls, outreach, support through hospitals, hospital associations, professional associations, state and local health departments, and more. I'd like to now turn to the situation in Dallas in terms of infection control, and I'm sorry, in terms of contacts, and just outline where we are. First, our understanding is that the nurse remains in stable condition, and we are thinking of her, I am thinking of her constantly, and hoping for her steady recovery. For the first patient, the index patient, as we call him, there were 48 contacts. Those contacts have now passed more than two-thirds of their risk period. They've all passed more than 14 days, and while it wouldn't be impossible that some of them would develop the disease, they've now passed through the highest risk period, and it's decreasingly likely that any of them will develop Ebola. Second, for the nurse who's now hospitalized, there was one and only one contact. That is a representation of what happens when you do active monitoring, when you do contact tracing, and when you encourage people to come in for care promptly. In the first patient who had Ebola in the U.S., 48 potential contacts. In the second, one potential contact, and that individual had contact before the nurse was severely ill. The nurse is not severely ill now, and generally people are not highly infectious at that point. So we will hope that he does not develop infection. Third, since the nurse did develop infection, we can't rule out that other people who cared for the individual, the first patient, the index case, had exposure. Our teams have been working very hard to cast a wide net and identify everyone who might have been exposed in that circumstance. That includes anyone who went into the room and that includes people who might have handled specimens of blood that were taken from him. At this point, the team has identified 76 individuals who might have had exposure to the index patient. Of those 76 individuals, all will be monitored for fever or symptoms on a daily basis, actively. I know it's in the media, and there are several of those individuals who have been concerned about their health and have come in for care and been evaluated. Dr. Lakey will outline the results of those evaluations. I will share with you that it is very anxiety-provoking to have had a potential exposure to Ebola. When I got back from West Africa, I had gone into Ebola treatment units, and let me tell you, every time I had the slightest sore throat or headache, I was concerned, and that's what we want healthcare workers to do, be concerned about their health if they are in this group of 76 individuals, and if so, come in for care rapidly so they can be assessed. We would much rather see a false alarm than someone who lets their illness go on for a day and potentially gets sicker and potentially exposes others. So that's the system as it should work. We want people to come in if they have any symptoms. Given that there was one patient, the second patient, the nurse, did get infected, it's possible we will see other people become ill. We hope that won't be the case. And I don't want anyone to take out of this that there were 76 exposed people. There's 76 people who had some level of contact and therefore are being actively monitored. So I'll stop there and turn it over to Dr. Lakey for details of those individuals and anything else you'd like to say. David?
Thank you, Dr. Frieden, and good afternoon, everyone. It's been 14 days since our first case of Ebola was diagnosed in the United States, and we've had a very busy time here. Since the passing of Mr. Duncan, we have unfortunately had one additional case, and we know that's one too many, and we knew that's a possibility. And if she's listening, again, we're thinking about you and doing everything we can to make sure you get the treatment that you need. We have a force here on the ground in Texas to make sure that this is contained. We have state leadership here on the ground in Dallas, teams from the CDC, the hospital, and local partners all working together to confront this. Healthcare workers are understandably worried, and our top priority is their safety and the health of everyone in Texas. I had the opportunity yesterday to go to the hospital and talk in detail with the team that's there on the ground at Presbyterian Hospital. That team consists of the CDC, individuals from the state epidemiologists, epidemiologists from the local health department. We're fortunate to have two nurses from Emory here on the ground, and working in concert with the hospital. They are looking at every detail of infection control, and truly they have the best national and international experts here on the ground at Presbyterian. The group of people originally identified as contacts, the 48 individuals, have passed the critical period, as Dr. Frieden outlined, and they're doing well. Obviously, we need to continue to monitor them, but the good news is that they continue to do well. The one close contact of the healthcare worker diagnosed this weekend is also doing well and has no symptoms. That person is being actively monitored. We are also caring for and monitoring the healthcare worker's dog, and that is going well. We are actively monitoring a group of healthcare workers, as Dr. Frieden noted, who were previously self-monitoring and had contact with Mr. Duncan. They are all doing well. But if symptoms are detected, even minimal symptoms, those individuals will be isolated and very likely will be tested for Ebola. We really do want to err on the side of caution. When people exhibit symptoms, they are identified extremely quickly due to the vigilant monitoring. And I want to assure individuals that no additional cases of Ebola have been detected. We understand that there's a lot of anxiety among workers and want to calm their fears and detect a case as quickly as possible. And we will quickly announce any positive results. And we're committed to giving you that information. So we have a large number of individuals now under active surveillance, but that seems to be going well due to that partnership between the federal government, the state government, and the local government working with the hospital. We're all very committed to fighting Ebola here in Dallas, and it's our singular focus with experts across the state and country. And so with that, Dr. Frieden, I would like to hand it back over to you.
Thank you, and we'll now take questions, starting with in the room.
Brina Tavernisi, New York Times. How many of the 76 were healthcare workers, do we know?
Those are all healthcare workers. All of the people exposed to the second patient were healthcare workers, except the one close contact I mentioned.
So drawing the blood.
I'm sorry, I said that wrong. The 76 were all exposed to the. Let me say it again so we get it all right, because there are a lot of numbers, and let's get them straight. First off, the first patient, the index patient, before he was hospitalized, had exposures or potential exposures to 48 people. Second, once he was hospitalized, there were at least 76 people who might have come into contact with him or his blood and who are being monitored now. We may identify a few more people as we go through records and identify other information, but that's the number who may have participated in some way in the care of the index patient. There's also one individual who is exposed to the second patient before she was isolated.
Janice McDonald, ABC. We understand that each hospital has to be able to diagnose an Ebola patient, but once they're diagnosed, why not then transfer them to one of the high-level containment centers?
We're absolutely looking at all of the options, looking at the possibility of transferring patients when necessary, and that's one of the things that the Ebola response team would consider.
Doug Stoddard with NBC News. It's our understanding that the nurse who was infected had received her certification for critical care nursing about 2 months ago. Are you comfortable with that level of experience treating Ebola patients?
I think what we are dealing with is a disease that's unfamiliar in the U.S. And caring for Ebola can be done safely, but it's hard. And we want to make sure that the protocols that we have and the support we have for healthcare workers are there on the ground so we can assist. And, you know, I've thought often about it. I wish we had put a team like this on the ground the day the first patient was diagnosed. That might have prevented this infection. But we will do that from today onward with any case anywhere in the U.S. On the phone?
Thank you. On the phone lines, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 and record your name clearly. To remove yourself from the queue, you may press star 2. In one moment, please. Our first question comes from Meg Terrell with CNBC. You may ask your question.
Hi, guys. I'm just wondering, you know, are you concerned about healthcare workers, you know, feeling safe and well-prepared on the job, concerned at all that folks will be afraid to come to work?
We are concerned that if healthcare workers are afraid to come to work or patients are afraid to go to hospitals or healthcare settings, we could see wider healthcare impacts. That's why it's so important that we focus on what will work here. We know how to stop Ebola. We know that care has been provided in hospitals throughout Africa without infections. But we know it's hard, and we know that a single breach can cause an infection. We know that a single slip can cause an infection. That's why we're looking at every aspect of the procedures so that we can make them safer, and we're empowering healthcare workers with information. Because when you're concerned about something, when you're worried about it, I find it's always helpful to get more information about it so you can understand it more fully. When we understand that Ebola doesn't spread from someone who doesn't have symptoms, that helps us understand where the risk is. If healthcare workers get the fact that they have to take a travel history from anyone with fever or signs of infection, that gives them the tools to protect themselves. And for the healthcare workers caring for the nurse in Dallas, concrete information on what they can do to keep their risk to the absolute minimum can address that fear and keep us able to respond to the needs of the community. Next question on the phone.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marion Falco with CNN Medical News. Let me ask your question.
Hi. One clarification and then a question. Did you say that the 48 people who were in contact with the index patient, because they're past the two-thirds mark, past 14 days, that they're unlikely to get Ebola?
Yes. The two-thirds of the incubation period is far more than two-thirds of the risk. Most of the cases happen within that 8 to 10-day window. We put it out to 21 days to be on the safe side. Doesn't rule out that there could be cases among those individuals, but it would be unusual. Your question?
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jackie Bischoff with Newsweek. You may ask your question.
Hi. I'd just like to find out what, if anything, the CDC has learned from the response to the outbreak in West Africa by organizations like Doctors Without Borders.
We work very closely with MSF, Doctors Without Borders. In fact, we have undergone and participated in and replicated their training course here. We've worked side by side with them in Africa. We have a very close partnership and relationship with them. One of the challenges is that the African environment and the U.S. environment are different in terms of healthcare. So things that are done routinely in Africa in Ebola wards aren't necessarily transferable to the environment in the U.S., but we think they do a terrific job, and we work very closely with them. Next question on the phone.
One moment, please. Our next question comes from Jack Fink with CBS 11 Dallas. You may ask your question.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Appreciate it. I wanted to find out, have you been able to identify the breach in protocol that led to the nurse getting infected? How crucial is that, and exactly how are you going about figuring that out?
We have not yet identified a specific interaction that resulted in the exposure and infection of the nurse. The way we do that is to review in great detail everything that occurred. She's been terrific at assisting our investigators and going through the steps so we can all try to learn together how to keep healthcare workers safer against the virus. It's something that we don't always come to a conclusion, but we always identify things that we can do to improve the process and improve the safety of healthcare workers there. Dr. Leahy, anything you'd like to add to this?
I don't think so, Dr. Frieden. Again, the patient has been working with the team, looking at the procedure. There's no specific error that has been identified. We're looking very closely at the protocols and how we can maximize the ability to contain the virus. But there's been no identified item at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question on the phone.
Our next question comes from Alice Park with Time. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you. Dr. Frieden, you mentioned that you have now since wondered whether you should have sent a team immediately when Mr. Duncan was diagnosed. Can you talk a little bit about why that wasn't done then?
We did send a team. We sent superb epidemiologists. We assisted Texas with the contact tracing, with the investigation, with monitoring of all aspects of the response. We did send some expertise in infection control, but I think we could, in retrospect, with 2020 hindsight, we could have sent a more robust hospital infection control team and been more hands-on with the hospital from day one about exactly how this should be managed. Ebola is unfamiliar. It's scary. And getting it right is really, really important because the stakes are so high. So some of the things that a hospital might do that they might think would make things more safe might end up making them less safe, such as using additional layers of protective equipment. So I think when we look back, we say, yes, we definitely should have put an even larger team on the ground immediately, and we will do that from now on anytime there's a confirmed case. Next question on the phone.
Thank you. Next question comes from Chris Perez with New York Post. You may ask your question. Chris, please check your mute feature. We'll go on with the next question, and that comes from Lenore Ayala with Telemundo Network. You may ask your question.
Hi. My question has to do with the four hospitals in the U.S. that specialize in treating the highly contagious diseases. Why are there only four with these biocontainment units? And as a follow-up, if you said that if necessary, you would transport a patient to one of these specialized hospitals, can you explain the procedure or protocol for that transport?
So the hospitals that have excuse me, the hospitals that have specialized rooms or specialized facilities were created because of the risk that there might be a new pathogen, not Ebola, but something that is unknown and we don't know how it spreads. And that's why at CDC and other parts of the federal government, we supported the creation of units that would be particularly suitable to unknown diseases. Ebola can be cared for in hospitals as long as there is a core set of training, facilities, and oversight in place. In terms of transport, we've transported patients from Africa. It's a lot easier to transport patients around the U.S. In the room, are there other questions? Okay, well, back to the phone now for two last questions.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kyle Mazza with UNF News. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Dr. Frieden, some are confused on the way some have recovered from Ebola and how some have died from the disease. Even though there is no vaccine, do you know, Dr. Frieden, according to your knowledge, why some people survive the disease and others do not?
We're not sure of all the reasons why some people do better than others, but we do know that people who are healthy going into the infection are more likely to come out of it. We also know that healthcare, standard medical care, can make a really big difference and at least double the likelihood that a patient will survive. Helping a patient's fluid balance, replacing electrolytes that are lost. This is excellent medical care. It can be given. It is being given at the hospital in Dallas as needed. And this is something that can make a really big difference. There are also experimental treatments that may or may not help and that will be considered for that individual, up to the patient and the treating physicians to make that decision. Last question on the phone.
Thank you. And that comes from Craig Snyder with Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You may ask your question.
Hi, Dr. Frieden. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to get a sense as to what degree a team that you're talking about has been sent over to Emory in Atlanta, or if there already is one at Emory, if that has become the model of what you're going to be putting together for elsewhere?
Both Emory and the hospital in Nebraska have very sound protocols and now have experience treating Ebola patients. We're reaching out to them, and as you heard earlier, two nurses from Emory are already on-site in Dallas helping them. And these are two facilities, and we all are working together to learn what works best, what's most practical to stop Ebola in the hospital. Before I make any concluding remarks, Dr. Lakey, would you like to say anything?
Well, thank you, Dr. Frieden. And again, I really do appreciate the teamwork, the support from the federal government in this response right now in Dallas. The epidemiologists are working really, really hard to map out who needs to be monitoring those individuals, and the hospital is working really hard to make sure our patient gets the best care possible. We're doing everything we can do to ensure that this does not spread further from the individual that currently is infected and anybody that has already been exposed, and make everything we can do to ensure no other individuals are exposed here in the state of Texas. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And just to wrap up, first, we're focusing on Dallas, supporting the patient, supporting the hospital, and minimizing the risk that there would be any further exposures with a very robust expert team on the ground working around the clock with the hospital and the health and the public health team there. Second, we're increasing our education and information to healthcare workers throughout the U.S. We are also initiating an immediate response team from CDC to any future case of confirmed Ebola in the U.S. But we will be there hands-on within hours helping the hospital deal with the situation if there is another case. And third, we're continuing to follow up with Dallas on contact tracing, identifying everyone who may be at risk, so that the same kind of decrease from 48 to 1 in the number of contacts can be continued if there are any further cases. Thank you all very much for your interest.
Thank you, and this does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.